This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we reveal how Key City Public Theater and its artistic director, Denise Winter, both may have been teetering on the brink of collapse. Neither is completely out of the woods yet, but all signs point to a happy ending. And now, we go inside the Compass. Live theater has been a vital part of Port Townsend for more than 100 years, from vaudeville shows at the Rose Theater in 1907 to edgy plays at the Tiny Chameleon Theater in 2016. But for more than 50 years, the beating heart of live theater in Port Townsend has been Key City Public Theater, formerly known as the Key City Players. What you may not know is that the beating heart of Key City Public Theater has been on life support for the last few years. Huge debt put the theater in peril, the entire board of directors resigned, and artistic director Denise Winter was stricken with serious health issues. Today, Denise says Key City Public Theater is healthy, and so is she. We spoke with Denise Winter about those issues, and we asked what the future holds for her and Key City Public Theater. We also took a walk down memory lane to hear some of her favorite theater stories. We begin with what Denise calls the challenge years. Now, during those challenge years that you talked about, I understand you had some health issues. Did that have any effect on the theater, and did it have any effect on you personally, if you don't mind talking about it?
Sure. Well, you know, here's the funny thing. I just had a significant birthday last year.
I'm not going to ask.
I won't specify. But you know, you don't know what aging feels like, and you don't know what limitations it may or may not put on you until you have some limitations. And I had a slowing down in 2014 of great significance in terms of my energy and my physical strength. And I was sort of tacking it onto, you know, well, I'm getting older, you know, pushing against that significant birthday that's coming up. And so when I got my diagnosis at the end of 2014, which turned out to be only half of my diagnosis, a big part of what was happening with me physically was causing extreme, and when I say extreme, I've been hard-pressed to find people with worse numbers than me, anemia, and also a vitamin D deficit that was at almost zero if you've been measured for vitamin D.
Wow.
And I assume that that was because the anemia, and then I was barely... It was hard to go to work every day. So anyway, I pushed through some of that towards, you know, as I got the diagnosis. And then midstream, I was facing a minimum of 2 surgeries in 2015. And then I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm. And so that was a blessing and a curse. The blessing being that it was super early detection.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the curse being that it threw my doctor, I had a team of 7 doctors, and it threw them into a complete tailspin, because the medications that I was on for the original diagnosis were like the opposite of what you should be on if you have breast cancer. So there were a lot of challenges about what to do next, the order in which to do things. And I, of course, live here with my husband, and it's just the two of us in terms of family. So I didn't have a lot of resources in that department. And it felt, you know, kind of lonely and kind of scary. And then the community stepped up in ways that I couldn't begin to list. And capture everyone and all of the things that people did. But the support network that was created within my staff and within the community was life-changing. And it's interesting. My friend is here visiting, who's known me for many, many years.
You can tell us his name.
Tony Gorski, who is here to be the judge for the Wearable Art Show. He saw and knew from me that I was having health issues. And when he saw the support online that I was getting through my Caring Bridge site and whatnot, he was worried whether he should come up and help. And he saw the support that I was getting from the community. It brought tears to his eyes. And he gets teary just saying it to me, that he couldn't believe the way the community stepped up around that and said, you know, because he has seen other friends in that situation and their communities did not. And so I'm very, very grateful to all of you who mm-hmm. helped out because there were just a lot of things. And, you know, Aaron Lamb set up this team of drivers for doctor's appointments. All my doctors were Silverdale and Seattle. I mean, anybody, you all know this. You all know this. You all, anybody who's had a medical issue yeah. and, you know, the daily trips for radiation, all that stuff. And just, I got to know people, mm-hmm. You know, in ways that I never had because we spent a lot of time in cars driving and gosh, that was really amazing. Mm-hmm. Just the things I learned about people and the friendships that deepened and the connection that I felt was really terrific. And what happened for the theater was actually good in some ways. And that was that fortunately, the timing of this was such that we had just really put some key positions in place in terms of staffing. Mm-hmm. And it required staff members to really step up in ways that they had to grasp levels of understanding of our operations that they might not have had to, mm-hmm. right? They could, they were welcome to, and I'm always trying to get everybody wrapped into, you know, all the decision-making and what we're doing. But now they really had to. And I feel like we still provided an excellent season of theater and good service and good community involvement. And our staff has stepped out of that season stronger. And I'm proud of my staff mm-hmm. and my volunteers for that effort. It was truly amazing.
I had a feeling there was a silver lining in all of that. And
yeah.
Apparently there was.
Yeah. And the other silver lining, of course, is that I'm past all of it. And to go back to the original part of the answer, which was I didn't realize, and I knew this going in, I didn't know how bad I felt until I didn't feel bad anymore. Mm-hmm. And the amount of energy that I have now, I run into people and they're like, oh, the old you, you know, yeah. And I didn't realize how limited I was by my health until it got resolved. And now I'm like, wow, mm-hmm. I have all this energy back. Mm-hmm. Yay. I'm not old. I mean, I am. I'm getting up there, but I'm, you know,
it's all right.
I have a different perspective now.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's great.
Everyone who's ever done live theater has stories to tell. I'm going to ask you if you could think of a couple funny or fun or memorable stories. But while you're thinking about that, because you may have to search back in those old brain cells of yours, I'll tell you one of mine to give you an idea.
Oh, great.
Sort of what I'm thinking about. I was doing Neil Simon's Barefoot in the Park before 1,200 people, the largest audience I've ever performed live before in my life. Big building. And it's the argument scene between Paul and Corey. I'm playing Paul. And I suddenly go up on my lines. For those of you who are in theater, folks, that means I blank. I don't know what my next line is. The woman who's playing Corey looks at me. She realizes. And she says, well, don't you have anything to say? Mm-hmm. And I kind of stammered. And I said, no. And she knows that I'm gone. So she walks upstage and through the pretend bedroom door and leaves the stage and leaves me alone in front of 1,200 people without a line in my head. Now, I kind of stammered for a little bit and then suddenly remembered and blurted out my line loud. And then she came back through the door and slammed it, and we continued the argument. It was the argument scene. So
right.
My friends, I think charitably after the show, said, we didn't even notice that you know, what happened because you were having an argument. We got it. But for me, it was my actor's nightmare.
Right.
And I've never forgotten it. So do you have any... any stories along those lines?
It is a sinking feeling. And I just... This was not the story I was going to tell, but I feel like I just have to say this. Standing in front of 600 people at the Wearable Art Show as the MC the other night when the People's Choice Award was taking longer than we thought to be counted, and there was nothing left scripted to do. Those of you who were in the audience saw what that looks like.
Did you do your little dance?
I did not dance, but I came up with lots of theater stories to tell because I was just standing there alone on the stage with no script. So it wasn't even a matter of forgetting. There just wasn't anything. And then you just make do. So here's a story that came to me just recently. I worked a long time, many years, at Children's Theater Company in Minneapolis, which is the second largest children's theater in the world, the largest in the United States. And we were doing a production of Alice in Wonderland, and it was opening night. So it was a gala night, you know, full house for, you know, I think it's about a 750-seat theater. You know, lots of families, everybody's there. Shows should be beginning any minute. And I get a call from the dressing room. I'm in the back of the theater in the booth. I'm the stage manager. And I get a call that they can't find the White Rabbit costume. So if you know Alice in Wonderland, you kind of need a White Rabbit.
Yeah.
And the actress had, you know, gotten dressed in all of her underdressing, but she was waiting till the last minute because it was a huge, what we call a pod costume. And, you know, hot, you don't want to have it on longer than you need to. So it was completely reasonable that this was the first she was going to look for it. And it was gone. It was gone. And I was in a dress and heels. And I remember having to run through the basement hallway underneath all of the audience and backstage so that we could all frantically look for the White Rabbit costume. And, you know, I'm tearing around in the basement and everyone's looking and we're just looking in every corner, every nook and cranny. Children's Theater Company is a huge building. And we're running up and down stairs and up to the costume shop and all over. And finally, I was in the costume shop and I looked and I thought, well, there's a rabbit costume. It's brown. It's from the Velveteen Rabbit or Beatrix Potter or something, you know, but it's a rabbit costume. And I grabbed it and I ran downstairs and I threw it at the actress. And she was like, but it's not the White Rabbit. And I said, I know, but it's a rabbit. I don't know which is worse, but I'm thinking that in front of children, a rabbit is better than no rabbit. So we worked through a few details because she had to go through a trap door that was just the size of the costume. And, you know, we had to make sure she could safely see out of it and all of that. We did all of that and the show went on. But I thought afterwards, only at the Children's Theater Company would there be another standby rabbit costume.
Yes.
Full bodysuit, you know, the full thing. Only there would I have been able to find another costume. We never solved the mystery of what happened to that costume.
But that's sort of a happy ending.
It was a happy ending, yes. This is another funny story, and I don't know why it strikes me funny, and it may not be funny to anybody else, but years ago, I did a production of Peer Gynt, which was epic. It was done in two parts. And the star of the show was Richard Thomas, who you may remember as yes. John Boy on the Waltons. Now he's on the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the star of the show. Terrific. Absolutely terrific to work with. But it was a marathon for him. And we would do these. Every day was a double show day in which we would do one part, you know, in the afternoon and the second part in the evening. But anyway, this is a testament to what people, your story made me think of this, of what people will observe or accept in a play. So it was a snow scene and there's white China silk all over the floor. He's in the snow and he's delivering this beautiful monologue, absolutely beautiful monologue. And we're gently shaking the snow bag and the snow is drifting down onto him. And it's just gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. And then in the middle of the scene, I'm working backstage on the show and the stage manager who's up in the booth says, "What was that?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Something just fell from the snow and it missed Richard by inches, just fell, landed on the floor next to him." And I thought, I don't know. And she said, "I think it's a broom." I said, "What?" It was a hand broom.
Mm-hmm.
And it had somehow in the course of the stagehands filling the snow bag,
mm-hmm.
it had gotten swept up into the box of snow with the dustpan and it had fallen into the snow. And when they dumped the snow box into the snow bag, it fell in there. It worked its way through to the end of the snow bag, which is just sort of open on the end. And it fell out while mm-hmm. the snow bag was rocking and just missed him and landed on the floor. Well, Richard, when it happened, he's in the middle of the monologue. This thing hits the floor and he glances over at it. And then he looks away from it, goes back to the audience and continues his monologue.
Mm-hmm.
So after the show, there was a post-performance discussion. Many of you have probably attended those things where you get to talk to the artists and, you know, the cast members and ask them questions about the show. And in the middle of the discussion, I'm of course, mortified that this has happened. You know, I'm hoping no one will know about it. And in the middle of the discussion, an audience member raises their hand and says, "I have a question about the significance of the broom in the snow scene." And I thought, what? What do you mean the significance of the broom? So for them, it was a part of the show.
Sure.
He looked at it, the actor responded to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so whenever these little glitchy things happen on stage, I'm always reminded of that. And I always say to people, you know, you never know. I mean, we don't want those things to happen, but you also never know what an audience member will just come to accept. So if you just deal with it appropriately.
It's the beauty of live theater.
It had some significant meaning for them. The broom in the snow scene.
Artistic director Denise Winter told us that the effects of the Great Recession between 2007 and 2009 really didn't strike Key City Public Theater until several years later, as her consistent record of financial success suddenly turned into consecutive years of deep debt, she had to make big changes.
We had to completely rethink on a business level how we operate. And that was the big shift. It was really the recognition of all parties. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, I wear two big hats, executive director, artistic director. And it doesn't matter if I'm thinking like a business person and I realize that it's a business. It takes the whole organization, you know, fundamentally changing its sort of culture around how we operate and really recognizing and then drawing in the talents of people who can support the decision-making and the thinking and the operations around how to run this now $300,000 a year business. So that's what we put a lot of emphasis in at the end of 2014 to turn things around so that we were able to predict and respond to risk in a more efficient way. So the good news is we really knuckled down in 2015 in terms of that level of thinking, brought on some really great board members, and we set ourselves on a course for a 3-year plan to, first of all, end the year without a deficit, which we did in 2015. We had really only had 2 significant deficit years. Then to work towards, in a 3-year period, having a reserve built and being able to operate a little more freely within the ebbs and flows of what a theater budget does. You have a lot of output of expense at the top of a season. That's normal every season. You've got to put out the marketing materials about what you're doing. You got to put up the upfront costs of royalties and things like that. And then the revenue comes later, right? Mm-hmm. And so how do you handle that? How do you staff accordingly? And so, you know, we did some tough calls. Like, we've got great staff members, but many took a layoff at the beginning of the season. I reshaped a little bit of how the season flows in order to allow for that. So we are really dark, as we say in the theater, mm-hmm. for the month of January. And then we come back light in February as we build up to our first event in March. And so, you know, some big fundamental shifts, some little shifts like that, and every person involved in the organization understanding what their role is in the organization and their responsibility to managing the assets of the organization accordingly, has really resulted in a tight team of very dedicated people who are building relationships outside of the organization that support what's happening within the organization. And so we're on a great path. You know, we're still in the challenge years, but finishing with the balanced budget and reversing our position from a deep deficit to a balanced with a little minor surplus was huge. We didn't even anticipate doing that within the first year. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we got that far in the first year set us on a good course. And now moving forward, moving towards building that reserve so that, you know, we feel a little less pressured on a month-to-month, pay-period-to-pay-period basis.
We have to go to lightning round because
we have to go to lightning round.
You're so good at this.
Yeah.
I know you went to Kenyon College in Ohio, but I don't know if you're a Midwest native. Tell us about your roots and how in the world did you end up in Port Townsend?
Okay. Lightning round. I'm originally from Pennsylvania, central Pennsylvania, born and raised mostly in Pennsylvania. We moved around a lot. No, my dad was not in the military. Got interested in theater at a very early age, as most people do, performing. Went to Kenyon College and majored in drama there. Came out of college and immediately started working in the theater, which is great and lucky. And I've never done anything else other than briefly having our juice bar in Port Townsend. But I was still working in theater at the time. Really, we came to Port Townsend because my partner and I, who are both theater professionals, between the two of us, we had lived in every region of the United States except for the Pacific Northwest. And we were just looking to make a change. And we were out on national tour and decided that we were going to put little pins in the map of each of our five favorite places that we thought we might want to live. And then we would check them out while we were on tour. And at the end of the tour, we hadn't really checked out this region much. And so we came out and we drove around and we just fell in love with Port Townsend and we moved here.
Mm. And your partner you mentioned is Albert.
Yes.
And what does Albert do? I believe he works in Seattle. And
primarily, yes.
And my follow-up question is, what does he do? Because I know what he does. But,
yeah.
But what I want you to tell us. But I also want to know, how in the world does he do that commute? I mean, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
So he's a theatrical stagehand. His areas of expertise, first and foremost, is audio, live audio. And then he does a lot of AV work and also lighting, but definitely live sound. Talk about somebody who's worked with everybody. I mean, name a band that he hasn't done sound for, but he doesn't love the commute. No, it's tough. It's really tough.
He doesn't drive back and forth every day.
He doesn't drive back and forth every day. We have a place over there that mm-hmm. he stays, but he tries to spend as much time here as possible, but he's worked in all the big houses over there, and he does what they call the bounce with the stagehand union. So you kind of, you do all the cool things that you want to do as they become available. And mm-hmm. so he works in lots of theaters over there and the big convention center and everything from, you know, a birthday party at Bill Gates's house to a giant Starbucks convention or a,
I'll have to,
you know,
ask him what that was like. Maybe I'll bring him in next for an interview.
I don't know if I was allowed to say that on the radio.
Okay. It'll all be edited.
No, I'm just kidding.
Now, I know this is like asking a parent to admit which of her children is her favorite, but of all of the shows that you've been involved with, whether it's in Port Townsend or New York or China, whether you've been acting, directing, artistic director, backstage, whatever, I don't think you could probably narrow it down to one, but what are a couple of your most memorable favorite experiences?
I had the pleasure of, in my very first year working professionally, I worked at Hartford Stage in Hartford, Connecticut, with a brilliant director, Mark Lamos, and his production of A Midsummer Night's Dream remains one of the quintessential pieces of theater that I was involved in. I got to be on stage in it, even though I was working backstage, because that's one of his things. Like, everybody's in the show, no matter what you're doing. And it was on the cover of American Theater Magazine. It was just one of those standout productions. We won the Tony Award for Regional Theater that year. Mm. So that's definitely at the top of the list. Hands down, my favorite production here in Port Townsend as artistic director and director of the show was one of the other famous people that I've worked with. The production of A Life in the Theater,
yes,
with John Considine was a beautiful experience in every way that you can imagine. Mm-hmm. That was just a stellar experience. We had a great time on that show. And this is sort of an oddball one. I haven't really thought about it in a long time, but there was a production at Children's Theater Company in Minneapolis when I was there. They were known for page to stage. They would take books. Mm-hmm. There was a Barry Lopez book called Crow and Weasel, which, if you've never seen the book, it's a Native American story and beautifully done. Beautiful. I mean, there was a boat that just drifted down in the fog. I can't possibly describe it, but the imagery in it and the costuming was so spectacular. The tour of Animal Fables from Aesop, from the Barbara McClintock book, that was also a Children's Theater Company production that we toured around the United States. Absolutely gorgeous. It was almost all ballet. There was hardly any spoken word in it. Terrific company of very talented people. That was outstanding. And then the production of The King's Stag, that was from American Repertory Theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We toured that to Taiwan. And Julie Taymor, if you know, like The Lion King, mm-hmm. Julie Taymor did the masks, and it was exquisite and beautifully designed and impeccably performed. I was very proud to be a part of that production. So, I mean, there are so many. I've done some beautiful, beautiful theater.
That you didn't say Prisoner of Second
Avenue. Prisoner of Second Avenue at Key City Public Theater that starred this snappy actor, Dave Cunningham.
Yeah, never mind.
We won awards for that show, though.
Aaron won. Aaron Lamb. Best Actress. I was best nominated actress. For Best
yeah.
Actor.
It, yeah. was, it was an excellent production. Director Amanda Stewart. It was
her debut, yeah,
her debut
actor,
at Key City
director.
And as a director. And yes, I mean, there are many.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was a tough one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You've done pretty much everything there is to do in live theater, from backstage to directing to acting, as well as obviously running the whole show as artistic director. So of all the different metaphorical hats that you've worn, which do you like best and why?
Well, hands down, I like directing best of all.
Directing the show itself.
Sure. Mm-hmm. It's the most challenging part of my job and the most fun at the same time and the most rewarding. Taking the concept of something and bringing it to life, having to collaborate with so many artists at the same time, pulling everyone's vision to one, you know, together to one vision that we can all be proud of. you know, I do, I do wear a lot of hats mm-hmm. in my job, too many, and everyone knows it. And we're every day in every way we work to divide out those hats. And I love many aspects of my job. I like the business side of things. I don't mind wearing those hats, but I know that I feel different when I walk in the rehearsal room and can focus on just that aspect. For those hours are very precious to me when I'm in the director's seat. That's which the director's seat for me is usually not sitting very much, but mm-hmm. but that's the most rewarding for sure.
Your bio says your work has taken you to 48 states plus Canada and China. So what two states did you miss?
Nobody ever asked that. I never worked in, I worked in all of those states. Mm-hmm. I never worked in Alaska or Hawaii. I've been to Hawaii. So I've actually been to 49 states, but wow. I've worked in 48. And when I moved to Port Townsend, I said, oh, goody, I'm finally going to get to Alaska. I'm so close.
And yet?
And I still haven't been to Alaska. So it didn't help to get to Port Townsend. I didn't realize that it's still really, really far away. Yeah. But yes, it was quite an opportunity to work in all those states. It's much different than just visiting, you know, just going there as a tourist, because you're actually working with people who live there. And you get a much different view mm-hmm. of where you are when you're there with people who live and work there.
Well, you've been the artistic director at Key City Public Theater for how many years? 10, 11?
I think it's 11 now.
It's 11. So you've yeah. got more than a decade.
Yeah.
And I don't know what your future plans are. I'm going to assume you're going to be here forever. But let's say you are here for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. What's your vision for the theater? Do you see any changes?
Well, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure things will change just because who wants to be stagnant? But I don't want to change for change's sake. I think that one of the things that I hope will happen is what's already happening is that we keep involving more and more artists in the community who may not recognize that the theater is a venue for them. I was just having this conversation with some of the artists who were in the Wearable Art Show and reminding them that, you know, if making beautiful things to wear that are interesting and fantastical is something that you enjoy doing, you don't have to just do it one time of year in Port Townsend for the Wearable Art Show. You can design costumes at Key City Public Theater. In fact, mm-hmm. four of the artists in this year's show represented in the Wearable Art Show this year have either designed costumes for Key City or will be designing costumes in this season. But that goes for visual artists and musicians. And, you know, the thing about theater is it's the culmination of all the arts. And so, you know, there, it's a venue for everybody, right? For every type of art. So I have gotten Don Tiller, great visual artist here in our community, has designed sets for us. Terry Tennyson, you know, I'm forgetting other people. Sorry. It's not that I'm forgetting you. I just don't have time. You know, the more of that happens, the more cross-pollination with the other arts. I'm super excited about the potential for that and where that's headed. And the other piece of this that's really just been growing recently and is taking off is our apprentice program, where we bring in recent college graduates. We're sort of making a real connection with Cornish College of the Arts. And some people come for a summer-long apprenticeship and some come for all year long. And then watching them do their year of theater here, where it's their first job in their field and they're building their resume and they're getting all this experience working with professionals and working in a tight-knit theater company and learning how to operate a small theater and then going off and then what they do next, right? You know, our very first ever apprentice was Star Peters, graduate of Chimicum High School, went to Western Washington University, came back, and I gave her an apprenticeship for a year. And then she left and went to Louisville, where she works. She works as a stage manager for a museum, but also she stage manages in a lot of the theaters there. And her, mm-hmm. she's getting married, and her husband is a theater artist that she met in college, and he does lighting design there in theaters in the Louisville theater scene. And her, you know, her mother just, you know, thanks me every time she sees me for launching that start of that career. And sometimes our apprentices go off and they don't do theater, but they do something else, but they still take all those skill sets.
Sure.
And they have this backing behind them of someone who's going to write them a letter of recommendation. And then our local students who can use those apprenticeships. Maybe they don't choose to do a whole year like Star did, but they might do a summer, or they might come home for their Christmas break and, you know, and do like a short-term apprenticeship. I'm really excited about where that program is headed and what it means, and that young blood that comes in and feeds the theater with their passion and their newly found skills and their dreams and ideas, and mixing with all of us and bringing new perspective. It's I think one of the coolest things that's happening at Key City Public Theater right now.
Mm-hmm. So many questions. I didn't even get to half my questions that I had for you. I could talk performing arts all day long with you, but I did want to give you a chance to do this. Before most performances at KCPT, you tell the audience about the little white envelope. Now, since I know you haven't memorized, could you grace us with that little speech now and conclude it by telling KPTZ listeners how they can donate to the nonprofit 501c3 organization that is Key City Public Theater?
Well, many of you are familiar with the famous little white envelope. Any check, any size, any time that arrives in the little white envelope, it's met with a dance of joy performed in your honor by me. I'm happy to do it because it's gifts from individuals like you that make great theater possible here on your stage at Key City Public Theater in Port Townsend. So we thank you in advance, and we thank you with a dance.
With Denise Winter, Artistic Director for Key City Public Theater, this is David Cunningham for KPTZ News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by David Cunningham. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ, 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, I'm David Cunningham.